lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Good evening, and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for episode 163, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, Canada, and streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream. Song Talk Radio is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting, brand new songwriters or established professionals, and together we share tips, techniques, and we share cool things found, and hopefully together we all become a little bit better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me tonight are the adventurous members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. We have brave Bruce Herrett.
Thank you. Bruce here, bravely ready to make this radio show brave.
Awesome. And sitting in for Phil Emery tonight, we have Danger Dave Miner.
How's it going, everybody?
He's dangerous.
He is. And taking on our social media adventure, we have Victory Vanessa Reland. Welcome, Vanessa.
She's doing the Queen's Wave now.
Yes, she is. Yeah. During the show, send in your comments and questions to Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we'll share them with the listeners in real time. Please stop by our website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on the show. At this point, we're booking for June. It is now
March.
That's pretty impressive, Neil.
You know, did you mention that Phil's away tonight and Dave's filling in?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I missed that part.
I've been a stand-in, I think, for Bruce and for Neil. I think this completes the
set
for me now.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
You're
way to go.
Filling in.
Yes.
I am filling in for Phil. That's right. There's an old proverb that goes, when the heart overflows, it comes out the mouth.
Really?
Profound.
Who said that?
I'm not really sure. Oh. But the proverb certainly holds true for Eric Sorensen, the singer-songwriter behind the band Generic, whose original folk rock songs are at times dark and other times uplifting. A melancholic optimist, Eric believes that everyone can face their own personal demons and transform them into something positive, and that music is an important part of that process. Drawing his inspiration from the human condition, Eric crafts songs that tug at the heartstrings and feed the soul, shining a melodic light on the darkness within each of us. Eric is currently preparing to release his debut album, Directions Home, which is a musical journey from rejection to belonging. Beginning with the angst of adolescence, moving through love and loss, finally arriving at acceptance, the album expresses a wide range of emotions through shifts in instrumentation and poetic lyrics. The album is due out in the spring of 2017. Spring was like 2 days ago, Eric.
Yeah, not the first day of spring.
Mm. Okay.
As long as I'm out by June 20th,
I think. You'll be good until the middle of June,
We'll be all right.
Eric is active in the Toronto music scene. He co-hosts the monthly Songwriters Meetup, which we all know about. And he also hosts a weekly open mic and plays regularly both solo and with his bands The Space Between and Hangostine Mangbook.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah.
That's the point.
That's awesome. Welcome back to Song Talk Radio,
Hey.
Eric.
Thank you very much for having me back.
It's been a while.
What is a mangostine anyway?
It is an exotic fruit.
Like
the fruit, our band has purported health benefits that are poorly researched and is difficult to cultivate commercially.
And very high in sugar.
And very sweet.
Sweet and
don't
filling.
Forget the sweetness.
So, of course, but before we get to Eric's stuff, the big news this week was the passing of Chuck Berry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
Dave, did you have any memories of Chuck?
Not specifically. My dad was a big rock and roll fan, so of course he would have been one of these iconic artists that was on in the house. And on his passing, I was just thinking, like, on a long enough timeline, if you play rock and roll guitar, period, Chuck Berry is an influence, and he's one of very few people who you can say that to, with respect to anybody playing this type of music today.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What is it about Chuck Berry that established that sound? Was it his style, his chord choices, his groove? What was it?
I think that, and I'm not a great historian of that period, mm-hmm. but I just think, like, what he contributed at a time when rock and roll had a vocabulary to develop. He was very, influential, and I'm sure there's a lot of other artists who would have been active at that period. But he's somebody who was wildly creative at a time when this was a new art form that was just kind of taking shape.
Late 50s?
I was possibly negative 20 in the late 50s.
Yeah.
So.
As far as I'm aware, like I'm not an expert on Chuck Berry by any stretch, but as far as I've read and I'm aware that he kind of blended blues together with hillbilly kind of music, and then kind of invented the rock and roll genre out of the mashing of those.
And then Elvis gave it the hips.
Well, it's at a point where, you know, there's a debate over what was the first rock and roll song. Was it Bill Haley and the Comets? Was was it Ike Turner? He's just one of those people whose music has endured so much to the point that probably if you hung out at a music store in Toronto on the weekend long enough, someone would inevitably play the Johnny B. Goode riff.
Yeah. Well, the influence, my exposure to him was through the Beatles and the Stones. So when the Beatles hit in the early 60s, played on my brother's little portable record player in his bedroom. The very first Beatle album I ever heard was Vinyl Kids, Vinyl. This is the real original vinyl, 33 and a third. And they were playing that original song, original album of the Beatles. There were a lot of covers on there. And one of them was, I think it was it Johnny B. Goode? Because John Lennon loved his stuff. He loved singing the rock and roll stuff, right? And so that's where I heard it. What about you, Eric?
Well, I, you know, like Dave was saying, you know, he's a major influence on anyone who plays guitar in a rock and roll sort of way. But I was just reading an article on the way here about how we kind of hero worship these people, and it was kind of talking about, you know, his mistreatment of women. Mm-hmm. He was imprisoned for 2 years for taking women across state lines for quote unquote immoral purposes. Mm-hmm. He was controversy. Yeah. It's not controversy. He was a bit of a mean guy. And so as much as there are musical elements, he had a huge impact on the genre, and he was ahead of his time. I think it's also important to recognize that he, you know, not hero worship and not say, you know, oh, he was the greatest guitar player who ever lived. And
I mean, lots of people are like that.
To rain on the parade. That's
well, no, yeah, no, yeah, but it's enough. A balance, because I remember talking to a woman once, and it was a famous artist. I won't even say his name because he was famous for being very cruel to his wife, beating her, and she said she could not look at another one of his paintings again once she knew that. And we got into this big discussion about, can you separate the life of an artist from their art? Dave?
Well, there's a great quote that I heard once because there are so often these cases where someone does tremendous art and they seem to have a lot of flaws as a person. Mm-hmm. And the quote that has always resonated with me in that regard is that art is a conversation, so it helps to know who's speaking to you.
Yeah. Good one.
What does that mean to you, that it matters then?
So, it does. Like the argument, the counter argument might be like, oh, well, what does it matter if this person was, was a bad person if they made this great art? Can you separate those two things? And or I won't like a great song because I don't like the person who wrote it.
Yeah.
And I think this contextualizes that in a human way as opposed to just a like a binary way.
Yeah, that Frank Sinatra's work, when I read some of his history, I thought, it's not a very nice man, really. Mm-hmm. And I started to not, when I listened to him, I went, it changed it for me. So I think in fact, since this is a human being, I remember when I was studying Buddhism, there was a very talented Kiki Mizumi is her name. She plays cello and piano and she sings and she writes. She's an amazing lady. And she said, I've been looking at my lyrics lately, Bruce, and there are some songs I just can't sing anymore because they're old standards, but they're horribly sexist, right? Mm-hmm. And dark and mean and from another time. And she said to me, it's important that you know what you're putting out in the world when you sing. Mm-hmm. Covers especially, right? Mm-hmm. Well, your own songs too, right? There's kind of a... not a moral imperative, but there is kind of a your own values need to come through, right?
Well, and I think that you can make a statement and start a conversation, like you're saying, and if you know who's here. I think of, I was a teenager when Nirvana's song Rape Me came out, and it was very controversial.
Yeah.
And, people are saying, well, you can't play this. We can't. They had to change the title of the song to sell it in Walmart, I think, or Kmart, something like that. Waif Me, that's right. Mm. And and then they went and they played it on SNL, and it was kind of controversial, but he's shining a light on this topic. And on the other hand, I know people who won't watch Woody Allen films or Roman Polanski films anymore.
Because of their private life.
Because of,
so-called private life. They don't have any.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say, if anyone's interested in reading that Chuck Berry article, it's on a website called theoutline.com, and it's called Why Can't We Be Honest About Chuck Berry?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's be honest about Eric.
About Eric, yeah.
Well, let's hear a tune. Is it that time of day?
Yeah, actually it is. Mm-hmm. So these are cuts off your new album.
They are.
So these are relatively finished, or you're still kind of tweaking the
These two
tracks?
Songs are finished, although I have this show at the Opera House at the end of this week.
Right.
And so I've been rehearsing for that, and my bandmate Liz, who's been on the show, Liz Jerriman, has been adding some harmonies to the song Directions, which I may bring into the studio to add because they sounded really good and it wasn't originally in my plan.
Uh-huh.
So we might just add a little layer of sheen of harmonies on that, but these songs are basically done.
Mm-hmm.
The tracking is done for the album, so we're moving into just finishing up some mixes, and then we'll do mastering, print some CDs, and CD release party to come.
So, yeah, that's amazing.
We'll tear it apart anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
And if you just talk briefly, Eric, about the kind of... You've put together a concept album.
It is a concept album in a sense.
So what's the kind of thinking behind...
Well, it's not necessarily like a character. I mean, it's a sort of an imaginary character loosely based on me and, you know, as loosely as you can imagine. All the songs stand on their own, but the way I've organized the album is that there's usually a full band song or an acoustic song with vocals and music, and then there's a short sort of instrumental or interstitial song that kind of leads it into the next part of the story. So it kind of starts out at the teenage angst and, you know, never feeling like you can do anything right and having to kind of set out on your own and feel like you don't know where you're going. Through, like you said in the description, to, you know, falling in love, losing love, and finally kind of arriving at some place where you accept yourself.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. All right. Should we have a listen then?
Yes.
Okay.
What's this called?
This song is called Go, and in brackets, don't go, but go is fine.
All right.
There are no words left worth saying when the tears run dry. It's just a song that I'm playing about the years gone by. We fumble forward blindly. Safe and secure. I still want you beside me. You say you can't be sure. Sound of her name.
right. That was Go, Don't Go by Eric Sorensen. Very
cool
nice. Very, very cool song, yeah.
Thank you.
Do you mind if I mention two words to you? It's a great compliment.
Sure.
Blue Rodeo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally heard that drum beat off the top and then your voice come in and that kind of phrasing and stuff, it's really beautiful, pure, like Canadiana.
Yeah.
Toronto folk pop,
that's
whatever
cool.
you want to call
it. I think Jim Cuddy lives in my neighborhood. I see him at the
coffee
shop.
Yeah, he does.
I like their new single. I feel like covering it.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan.
There you go.
I actually hate it when people say you sound like, right? But it's not that your voice sounds like it, but I really like you've chosen a genre that's really honest. It's folk music, basically, with a beat, right?
Mm-hmm. Wait till the next song.
And, okay, it's a little different. So I'm going to fill in for Phil tonight, and I'm going to say, I think your title is I'm Coming Home, don't you?
I thought that at the end of the first chorus,
but then... It's nice to surprise at the end.
Yeah, but then at the end of the song, it's all I'm looking for is home.
Yeah, you changed it up nicely.
Well, and what's the album called?
The album's called Directions Home. There's a home reference in every song.
Yes.
Oh. And so,
so why do you call it Go if the last line is Don't Go? Where's the go? Oh, go.
The go
where
is
you
the
need
chorus,
it.
Phil.
I missed that. was Phil who said that. Bruce would have noticed that go is the start.
It's a very, very simple title, right? Like,
and you know, like every song on this album could be called Home. The song Long Way is I'm a long, long way from home. Hard Drive has a bit, you know, I'm coming home. You know, so they all have that reference, but it's the final song. The idea is that the first song is called Directions and the very last song is called Home. The album
so
is
what
called
stage
Directions
of
home.
Life is this? Is this the lost love?
Like the very bottom of the circle just before it starts to swing up again. So like you've left home.
This isn't sad at all. It's got a nice beat and everything.
I would call it melancholy. It's upbeat but sad.
I didn't find it sad.
No.
Did you, Dave?
You have a little
tear in your eye.
Well, I'm a very tender person. But I like the tension in the Go, Don't Go as a title, and that there's a, you know, like it evokes a beautiful conflict, I think.
So did you feel sad, though, or melancholy?
Not necessarily. Like it's
pensive,
an it's an upbeat song, but there's an emotional complexity to it.
Yeah,
no,
thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah, there's a little bit more
complexity. That's a fancy word.
Yeah, there's a little bit more subtlety too. It's not outright sad. It's not outright happy. It's kind of in the middle. There's
not
like
life. It's not a weepy song.
No.
It's about letting go of something you don't really want to let go, but you've come to terms with it.
Well, but there is also a little bit of hope in it. Like I'm seeing a little bit of hope. Go where you're needed. There's no need to be alone. Like that's a positive thought,
right?
You know,
yeah. I didn't put the line, you know, I don't like sour grapes anyway, in there.
Yeah,
right. I hope you're happy.
Yeah, it's definitely like a mixed feeling kind of thing. It's you know, sort of like if you can imagine, maybe it's like the first day you kind of leave the house fully dressed after a breakup. Like
you get
out of your pajamas finally and like, you know,
right,
you're like,
right,
you know what, I'm gonna go for a walk and it's a little bit sunny and maybe you don't feel great, but
you're on the mend.
Well,
I go for a walk in my pajamas after a breakup.
When you first wrote the song, were you envisioning the production this way with kind of an upbeat thing, or was that something
it was pretty bleak when I first wrote it, I have to say.
Slower?
Was this your producer kind of
No, because with Mangosteen Handbook, I've played this song a few times, and definitely the producer did help a little bit. My friend Will, he's great, so he helped a little bit in terms of the arrangement. I had an extra verse that I didn't really love, and he was saying, "Well, it's a little long, you know." It's great. Third verse is gone. Let's do it. Double chorus at the end. Let's go. All right. So the original sort of treatment of this was. Had like really sad lyrics and was just acoustic guitar and was like, it was just really...
It was slower.
It might have been a little slower. I mean, like I recorded like a demo at home with no drums, and so
it definitely had
a milder feel to it. Mm-hmm. But since we've started playing it live over the last year and a bit, you know, I can't remember exactly how that keyboard sort of hooky part came out.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice little touch.
It's a really hooky punch.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
Thank you. Yeah.
And the woman's voice is really nice, too.
Yeah, that's Liz.
So you make a conscious choice. We talked about this before, Neil, haven't we, where someone has lyrics that are just a little bit pensive, sad, or melancholy, or whatever, and then you kick it with a beat, and it kind of saves it from being dirge. So it's kind of like, well, you know, you're not defeated. You're sad, but there's still fight in you, and the drum beat kind of gives that energy to it.
Yeah, and that's not an uncommon thing at all.
I like that contrast, too.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And it's not an uncommon thing at all. There's lots of songs out there with a bit of a bleak lyric and upbeat and happy.
Well, I'm also really intrigued because, like, this seems like such a sort of a classic songwriting form. But so I'm really intrigued that you're sort of marrying that with, like, the concept album concept. Mm, and so I'm wondering if maybe the song might suggest a certain meaning in isolation, but when you hear it as part of the whole entire song cycle,
in context, it conveys something else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the next song you're going to hear is the first song on the album. This is the, like, teenage angst. I've had it with this garbage. Right. I almost used a synonym for garbage. But and then there's that kind of this feeling of being alone and out there and not being sure where to go, and kind of a stripped down acoustic song, which I did play live on a previous episode of Song Talk, Long Way.
Which one was that? What was that?
Long, called? Long Way, it's called.
Long Way, okay.
Are you doing vinyl as well? Or too expensive?
If people want vinyl, tweet me at generic, G3N Eric, because I'm not planning to do vinyl, but if there's demand, I will definitely
do
only
vinyl. Bruce will listen to it.
No, but Dave, let's talk about this. The fact is, in the old days, when there was vinyl, you didn't put it on shuffle because there was no shuffle, right? So concept albums worked because somebody put the needle on the top of the record and listened to the whole thing, usually with headphones and some chemical in their body, perhaps. I'm not saying I did, but back in the day, right? So the thing is, when you have CDs or whether you have MP3s or whatever you have, each song is standing alone, which you've written. How are you going to get people to listen to the whole concept?
Well, you know, it's
you can invite them, I guess.
Like the cereal box, you know, I don't put raspberries in my Rice Krispies, but that's the recommended serving.
Right.
So the recommended serving is play it at track one and listen until the end. And I do hope that people will do that, like, the first time they pick up the album.
Well, because you'll tell them that it's more meaningful that way, maybe.
Maybe it's worth putting a note in the liner notes. You know, this album is...
On Moby's Animal Rights album, I think there's a... because I think it was maybe a more challenging record for him, and there's actually, a written plea on the back, like, please listen to this album end-to-end at least once or something to that effect. So ask the audience.
I think that's a worthwhile thing to say.
Yeah, and it still goes on today. I mean, the last Sloan record they actually did release it on vinyl, but they did sort of four sides, which were meant to be played you could play one side at a time, but at least each side was meant to be played in a sequence, and it kind of worked that way. But on a side note, there is an album, They Might Be Giants had an album in the 90s called Apollo 18, which had like 37 tracks on it, and the last 18 of them were this thing called Fingertips, which are just like little blips of songs, like a line, like 6 seconds of this, 3 seconds of that, and they actually put it in the liner notes: we highly recommend you play the CD on shuffle play.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you get a 4-minute song, and then you get like this 6-second something.
Oh. Those guys are so much fun.
That's cool. Well, that's what you've done with your interstitial instrumental pieces, right?
Yeah. It does take you somewhere. So I hope that people will listen to it one time through. But, you know, I don't want to tell people what to do. If they want to listen to it backwards.
No, but you can make a recommendation for maximum enjoyment kind of thing. I know when I made my CD years ago, I sweated the order of the thing. And then somebody said, they're just going to put it on random, Bruce.
Well, if the album is going to be called Directions Home, and there's a song called Directions, I think there's no harm in giving directions.
There you go.
Nicely done.
Absolutely. Wow. So getting back to this song, the first time I heard this song, Eric, I was actually a little, I don't want to say disappointed, but I was a little surprised by the chorus.
Okay.
In that your verse had a lot of space in it, right? You had a line and then a bit of music in the line and that sort of thing. And then your chorus was legato. And I was expecting, I think because of the upbeat nature of it, I was expecting the chorus to really take off.
Like punchy?
Yeah, like punchy and a little bit more staccato delivery of the line. But now that I'm hearing it again, it's actually kind of growing on me the way that it is, because it does have that kind of melancholy feel. So I think it does work.
It's not a sort of anthemic rah, 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 let's go thing.
Exactly.
And what we've been trying to do is sort of like, you know, regularly introducing a new element into the song. So there's, you know, there's a part where the tambourine drops in. There's a part where the harmonies drop in.
Yeah,
there's a part where the piano holds back. And then that comes in at the first break. And so I felt like the harmonies were an appropriate element to introduce at that chorus. I mean, they come in the pre-chorus just as ah, ah, ah. But lyrically, they come in for the chorus.
For the listeners at home, did you consciously decide not to have the chorus go off somewhere else than the verse? Did you consciously decide to keep it in the same family?
I don't even want to suggest that. I think the chorus does actually go to a different place. Melodically,
subtly,
it does.
It is kind of subtle,
but I think, yeah. I mean, to hear you play this on just acoustic guitar with that same kind of upbeat rhythm, I think the chorus would still stand out as
it's
a chorus.
Different.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
it's just not one of those ones.
It goes
that
to
really
a different
place in that the vocal is extended, a long syllable instead of, you know, a bunch of words. But I don't think when the song was written, it sort of came out the way it did. I didn't like some of the verses. I worked on that. The chorus sort of fell into place, and I never really reevaluated. I tend to only really dramatically reevaluate when there's something crying out to me that it needs to be
fixed.
What
about chord progressions, Eric? Can you tell the folks at home what key it was started in and then where it goes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it originally was written in C, and when I was in the studio, I sort of learned to keep going up a half step until the vocal was really good, and then until I push it too far, and then go back down a half step. So it's now in E flat.
Okay.
It's the same shapes. I just use a capo.
Yeah, but it's
capo
kind of
on
a nicer,
better
key for the mood of the song. But
for my voice as well.
That's what you want to make sure that it's a beautiful place for your voice. You got such resonance there, right? Now, do the chord progressions change into the chorus? That's something you have an option to do.
I thought it changed halfway into the verse.
Yeah, so there's three chord sections. There's the verse, which has the minor key, a minor chord in it. Mm-hmm. There's a pre-chorus, which has a couple minor chords as well, and then the chorus is just the
going back to the one
and four kind of thing.
Because I see we fumbled forward blindly.
That's the
shifted
pre-chorus.
That's shifted there.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your
so
pre-chorus.
The
yeah.
second half of each verse is a pre-chorus for you listening out there. And if you're looking at the lyrics, are they on the site?
The lyrics
today?
Are on the website, songtalk.ca.
Yeah, you can
on the
follow
front page.
The bouncing ball there if you like. I think we need to hear a little word from Dave now, though.
Dave's got something to say.
All right. For those just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. And tonight, our guest is Eric Sorensen. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have on March 28th, Emily Mack, on April 4th, Sean Pattison, and on April 11th, Charlotte and Sarah. If you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Sunday, March 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. At the Transat Club. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. Back to you, Bruce.
Back to you, Neil.
Yes, thank you, Dave. Okay.
It's like a card game.
Back to
so,
let's
yeah,
spike
just,
that one.
Yeah, we're just going to keep, the bouncing ball moving around.
Well, remember also that meetup is this Sunday.
Yeah, the meetup is this Sunday.
Just a few days away.
Yeah,
I'll be there.
Oh, excellent.
You should come to that, Dave, sometime, you know, because it's really, you meet a lot of songwriters who have guitars.
I don't want to confess what a terrible songwriter I am.
No, you don't. You could just
you don't
be an audience.
Participate.
Okay. No, please don't participate.
Just be that weird guy at the side, just like.
You could actually just be the guy that criticizes everyone else. How's that?
I do that enough in my regular life. I don't need to do it.
No,
on
but
my
if you come, we'll give you like 60 seconds to talk about your day job.
Okay, all right.
And then a lot of people there are there with guitars.
Excellent.
Anyway, just saying.
Well,
and
the meetup is actually where we first met Eric.
That's right.
And how have you found that meetup? How has it influenced your writing?
I think it's been helpful. I mean, I think my early days attending the meetup, I was still like a new songwriter, and I remember playing when it was hosted at the Central, and we would do the showcase.
Yes.
And I was so like crapping my pants nervous to play that. And it was really helpful for me. And then getting lots of feedback from people. And then after a few months kind of saying like, wait a minute, I don't need to do everything these people say.
Yeah.
I can just
do it.
I'm the artist. I can decide what to do. So it was like a really healthy progression. And then the guy who is drumming on this record, his name is Chris Draper. And I met him at the meetup. I played shows with people I've met there. Lindsay Foote, she's just put out another EP. She's a great singer-songwriter with a great band. And so I've met people that I've done shows with, people that I've jammed with.
Yeah, and you meet them at open mics, too, like the open mic when you started your open mic at the Libertarian Public House at Queen and Sherbourne on Thursday nights here in Toronto, every Thursday night. There were a bunch of people from, you know, from the meetup there. We're all sitting around. Oh, you're here. Oh, what are you doing here? And it's like we've created a community, I think.
Yeah, the community gets smaller and smaller, actually. I played this open mic festival at the Paddock and actually won a couple hours recording time from them.
Oh, nice. Well,
they had a sort of first round robin kind of thing and then a night of finals. And I met so many great people there. And, you know, then you end up friends with them. You see how many mutual friends you have and they come out to more open mics. And it's great. The world is getting smaller the more you're in the city.
People say that Toronto's this cold, heartless city and it's hard to break into the music business, all that stuff. And it probably is at the higher levels. But, you know, I say to people like that, I say, well, why don't you go to a meetup? Why not just Google Songwriters Groups Toronto? There's probably 10. You know, there's even the Songwriters Association of Canada, SAC, right? Is that called?
Yep.
SAC. There's SOCAN. There's the Transact Club. There's a site you can go to in Toronto to find all the open mics. I think you Google Open Mics Toronto. There's probably like 20.
Yeah, and mine's listed there.
There's many more than that.
Yeah, it's great. So there's where you're going to find your tribe, right?
Anytime someone says, how do I break into the music industry or something like that, our music scene, and I say, well, what are you doing? And, you know, they're not doing anything. Go to shows. Talk to people.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. Say, I liked your set. Buy a CD. You know, ask them if they need an opening act. Don't ask them if they need an opening act first. say hello and be a human being and start a relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
But, just go out and talk to people. That's the way to do it.
And the open mics are a great place to meet people who are on their way up. Like, they're trying out material and all that, and they're you support each other and you cheer for each other. And sometimes you harmonize for each other. Whatever.
Yeah, there's fantastic spontaneous jams that have emerged, and then you hear a cover that you like or something like that, and it gives you more ideas. And I find the best open mic performers are the ones that make you want to leave to go write a song. You know, you say,
not
during their set.
That's great. He's got a beautiful Yamaha guitar, and I just want to go.
But not during their set. You mean not after during, they
no,
finish?
Well, I don't leave. There's a few bands when you listen to, like a friend of mine was saying, anytime Modest Mouse came on at a party, someone would always say, like, where's the guitar? I got an idea.
Okay.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
If people are interested in the open mic, I do start the night at 8 o'clock with a featured performer.
Yes.
I'm booking for May, and you can get in touch with me through the Twitter links or
we
Facebook
should
or anything
I think
like
we
that.
Should mention, Eric, that this Thursday night o'clock is Bay's Shelter.
That's right.
Neil is a drummer, and our friend Adi Amon is lead singer on that.
Yep.
And they'll be opening, and then it's open mic at 8:45, 9 o'clock?
Yeah, about 8 o'clock we'll have the featured set. About 8:45 we start with the open mic performances. We go until late, and the sign-up sheet opens up at around 7:30.
And the food's pretty good.
The food's
pretty
good.
The space is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And the host system's pretty good.
Soundboard.
Oh, new soundboard.
Good.
All right.
Okay.
Very nice.
Will you put reverb on my voice this time?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Absolutely. I did last time, too.
Oh, it sounded great.
Didn't notice it.
I didn't notice it.
All right. Shall we do another song, Eric?
Sure.
Okay, so this one's called Directions.
Yes.
You want to set this up at all?
Yeah, so I've been on the show before. I would bring my acoustic guitar, and I would play my original light, folky songs, and this song is not that.
There was always a bit of rock and roll in you, though. I knew that.
For sure. Well, I used to play guitar in a rock and roll band. Yeah. And this was like the first song I ever really wrote. I kind of rewrote it. And actually playing this at the Songwriters Meetup was where I met Chris, the drummer. I played this song and he said, I want to play with you. And so you'll hear his drums featured on this recording. But the concept of this song is, as I was mentioning, it's the opening of the album. You're, imagine like a rebellious 17-year-old, fed up, kind of depressed, doesn't feel he can do anything right, and kind of taking off on his own. That's the idea. So a little more grit than most of my songs.
Right on. Okay, so have a listen.
And I'll find a way to get tough. One time.
By Eric Sorensen.
Thank you.
Nice tune.
From his debut album, Directions Home.
Yeah.
Which is going to be out in all major retailers in the spring.
This spring.
By the summer.
It's not done by summer. You can call BS on me.
That's right. This song does not have a chorus.
No, it's true. This song is really a weird structure. There's like two bridges sort of back to back. It's got a refrain that's kind of chorusy. But it was
what part are you calling the refrain?
When we started over. Yeah, the end of every verse kind of has a refrain-y part.
Yeah.
But when I wrote this originally, it didn't have the one of those breaks, one of the bridge parts.
Mm.
And I played it in my old rock and roll band like 10 plus years ago, maybe, called the Department of Justice. We had two guys who shared the singer-songwriter duties, and there was one show that we played this song. And I actually have a recording of it, and Phil challenged me to bring it in to show how much it's evolved. And I listened to it, and there's no way I'm sharing that with anybody. it was like sort of my first time singing in front of people, and I had no training, practice. Like, it was... I'm not being too self-deprecating when I say it was terrible. Mm. And so years later, when I had written a bunch of other songs, and I was like, wait a minute, I think this fits the theme of this album I'm working on. And I wrote a new part for it. I added a key change, and I brought it to the songwriters meetup and got some feedback and met that drummer and brought it into the studio and got rid of the key change. It was weird. It was very weird.
Okay.
I like the guitar solo too. I mean, that was great.
Yeah,
I could have listened to another.
Yeah, short and sweet.
Four bars or eight bars.
But, yeah, I am looking forward to playing this one at the Opera House. It's I'm really excited about the show. It's like probably the biggest show I've played. I've got a bunch of people coming out it's going to be a nice mix of, you know, some of my kind of classics, the Canadiana kind of go type songs, and a little bit of this, and, you know, one or two kind of really soft ones as well. So a nice mix of
how long is your
different
set?
Things I'm doing. I think it's about 35 or 40 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Is it a lineup with other artists? Like,
I'm playing with a 5-piece band.
Yeah. No. Oh, are there other artists before and after you?
Yes, there are. Ian Kay, The Fairest and Best. Who else is on the lineup?
Oh, Fairest and Best. That's
Robert.
What's his name?
He's been on the show.
He's been on the show. Robert? Piano player.
Okay. Oh, he does amazing 70s music.
Yeah, very ELO inspired and funny too.
A band called The Fame.
The Fame,
I want to say Nolan Hubbard. It's all on my Facebook page. You can go check out. There's an event for the show, or you can get tickets. It's $15 in advance, and you can get them on my website, generic.com. And that's generic with a 3, G3 and Eric.
And Eric, Eric Sorensen, S-O-R-E-N-S-O-N. And it's on our website as well. What'd you think, Dave?
I thought it was really good.
Did you rock?
Anything with crunchy guitars and a guitar solo, I'm on board.
Right on.
Did you want to elaborate on that?
No, I'm making associations that I don't think have to do with Eric's compositional process, because I'm thinking of crunchy guitars and concept album and listening to entire sides, and so now I've just kind of got Husker Du's Zen Arcade going on.
So don't
mind me.
Yeah. Well, I've got a question for you, Eric. I mean, this kind of strikes me just with these two songs at least, and I'm assuming maybe the rest of them, because you've got a kind of journey in the album. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that each song is very focused in on one kind of aspect of that, or one kind of moment?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they weren't. The writing process did not begin with, I'm going to write a concept album. Like, this song was kicking around. I think I wrote it when I was 24 or something like that.
Right.
And a couple of the other songs were written independently. There's a new song that I decided to add sort of in the last couple of weeks. I was in the studio one day and I was like, it was a song that wasn't done. And I thought, what if this was just done and I didn't need to add anything more? And I recorded it and it turned out great. Hmm. So there's one song that I did write kind of specifically for the album. The instrumentals I sort of wrote for the album. But for the most part, they kind of just came together as thematically related. So the order makes a lot of sense to me, to the extent that it is, like we were talking about, listening to it from beginning to end. I think I'm okay with people not doing that. Like, I think it's kind of fun when people listen to it and they say, oh, I think there's a bit of a story happening here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's, I don't want to, I really like David Bowie's Outside album, and he kind of wrote in.
That's one of my Desert Island discs. Nobody else likes that record.
Yeah. No, nobody mentions it. I saw them on that tour playing with Nine Inch Nails and Prick, if I can say that on the air.
Just
great band. I don't know what Kevin McMahon's up to these days, but they were a great band. But that album, he had like a little novella in there with it, right? And so it was this character, and it's his story. And so I've played around with ideas of writing something, some companion piece, whether it's a, you know, just a web page or some kind of leaflet or, you know, something.
Graphic novel.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to go all the way into, you know, maybe it'll just be like little brief summaries of sort of what the stage is, and like it'll be something that goes with like the digital cover or something like that for each track. I don't know, but they do stand independently, and it's okay if you miss the concept part.
But just getting back to what I was asking you, like, are each of the songs, like the songs themselves don't necessarily have a journey. Like, it's not like the character in the song is it a different place at the end of the song than they are at the beginning?
No, it's more the journey as a whole. So,
as a whole.
Yeah, this is the breaking out of the rut kind of song. And so the journey is through each song, not within the song.
No,
within
the song.
Absolutely.
Which is kind of an interesting thing, because a lot of the time we do talk about songs as, especially if they're story-like songs, you want to kind of, you know, move from one emotional space to a different emotional space. Mm-hmm. What you've done is you've done it over the course of several songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then each song is actually focused in on one kind of aspect or one kind of emotion.
Dave, you had something?
Yeah, well, you mentioned that you didn't set out to write a concept album, but I'm curious about in your compositional process, once you realized you had this body of work and it hung together in a certain way, like did you go back and edit the songs as you were tweaking and refining to
absolutely
better fit that concept?
Absolutely, I did. And the new parts in this song, for example, "You'll Never Find Your Way Back Home," that line, that was one of the ones that...
It wasn't there originally.
It was not. That whole section was you know, came 10 years after I wrote the song and was like, I should do something with this. And I thought, well, the vibe kind of fits, and I had this idea of Directions Home, and this was Directions. So, I added that part in. There definitely was some movement on the final song, Home. I wrote a third verse to really kind of bring it home.
So you added, you kind of added concept and stirred with some
that's right.
Some
material, and the instrumentals, right? I mean, you're probably not going to be able to pick out what the sentiment might be.
Well,
really,
we've got time for it. Do you want to play that instrumental?
There's a 1 minute piano instrumental. This song, I believe, would follow.
Did you bring it, Neil?
Yeah, it's on there, but I have one other question. This is something we do ask each guest. We haven't got to it quite yet with Eric. How do you start your song? So they started with a title, start with an idea. with the guitar riff?
Pretty rarely with just a title, although I have done that before. It's usually like if some phrase really pops out, I'll make a note and sometimes come back to it. But for the most part, I sit down with a guitar, and I love that Harry Nilsson line in How to Write a Song. It's as if you're, you know, sit down, put your guitar on your knee. If you're writing on piano, don't do that.
Yeah.
So it's usually guitar, although I do write on piano keyboard sometimes. But usually, yeah, I pick up a guitar, I play a progression, I mutter until I get some kind of chorusy bit, and then that's my skeleton, and I kind of attach things on from there.
Okay. Because even this part. Song, it sound at least the verse melody is really catchy. Because, like, you give you directions, I'll find a way to get lost. Like, you really kind of extend that last word.
And
it kind of makes me wonder if you wrote the melody first and then kind of fit in the words.
For this one, that all came together. So, like, the chords and the vocal melody and those lyrics, give me directions and I'll find a way to get lost, was the first line of the song, is the first line I wrote. And it was, and that's really the essence of the song. It's like, I've got to watch my tongue here. feeling kind of screwed up. I can't get anything right. So even with directions, I'm not going to find my way. And there are people kind of telling you you're not going to find your way. So it's usually the kernel, that the essence of the song that comes first. And for the most part, that's in a chorus. But a lot of times it's the opening line for me as well.
Yeah, and then there's a very compelling opening line. Like, it really kind of sucks you in.
Thank you.
To the content, you know. It's a great opening line. Okay, so this little piano ditty you got, so this is one of your interstitial kind of pieces?
That's right. If I remember correctly, this one would follow Go. So it's like Go would play, and then this little number is called Waking Light, and it's kind of like that feeling I was talking about of, you know, leaving the house after, you know, a few days of a dark, you know, ice cream binge kind of depression. And and you kind of get out of the house and you feel a little bit lighter. So it's called Waking Light, and then it leads to the, you know, that the more positive elements of the album.
Okay, let's have a listen. That's Waking Light by Eric Sorensen off his debut album, Directions Home. So what was your thinking with these little interstitial pieces? Like, what you would... So you would write the songs on either side of them first and then come to the instrumental bit and say, what does this kind of feel like?
The original concept for this album was that it was an EP. It was five songs sort of following the compass point directions. So north, east, south, west, and then the center song would be home. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of had this idea, well, I'll make the... northeast and northwest and southeast, and those I'll make those like kind of shorter songs. And you know, when the album is out, you'll hear the song I played on the show last time, Long Long Way, a real soft, mournful acoustic number, follows that rocking song Directions Home, and that's quite a contrast for the listener. And so I thought it would be useful and kind of give me a little bit more freedom to explore the journey by adding some instrumentals. And so I've been playing around with a keyboard at home, and I wrote a few parts. There were a couple of songs actually that didn't make this album that just never got finished, or I didn't feel like there was enough. It wasn't worth it to put it on. So there were, you know, a lot of my songs now have the home reference, and it's a little overdone. I'm looking forward to moving on. It was just to explore some more, like just looking at a sonic texture instead of a lyrical based song. Mm-hmm. Although one of these interstitials does have some lyrics, and then the other idea would be that there's a potential for like licensing to television and film if there's. You know, both instrumentals and like kind of pop rock stuff as well.
I liked it. I would consider it a sorbet between the courses.
Exactly.
When you
right.
have a feast,
yeah,
right?
That's right. That.
Because you want to cleanse the palate for the next.
I'm not that that advanced a chef, but a songwriting chef, yes.
No, absolutely. No, not at all. So all the little interstitial things are piano based, and the other songs are guitar based, or
no? The first one is like just a few bars of guitar and a little vocal.
Okay.
The next one is going to be I recorded it with just guitar, but I may add a little piano depending on how much it needs to fill out. The following one has guitar, piano, and we added a little French horn, which sounds
nice.
Really lovely.
Wow.
And then the last one's kind of piano, guitar, and like a bell kind of ringing glockenspiel.
Cool.
Kind of sound.
I remember the first time the Beatles started to put classical music instruments in with their great producer. What's
yeah,
his name?
George Martin.
George Martin.
Eleanor Rigby George Martin. Would not be the same song without those strings.
Oh, yeah. It was like they're a rock band, and now suddenly I'm hearing French horn, cello, okay.
Yeah.
But they were one of the earliest. Although I do remember in the pop days in the late 50s, early 60s, is that string sections were really big. Like they'd find a kind of rock song, like a pure rock song, and they'd... Even Simon and Garfunkel, they added a string section to one of their songs that didn't need it. But they were thinking, well, not that many people buy folk, so if we make it a little more elaborate.
Well, actually, there's
production,
a story about that particular song that they released it acoustic, and it flopped. And
Which song was this?
It's not
Sound
Trouble.
Of Silence, right?
Sound of Silence.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Simon and Garfunkel with a little classical guitar, they released it, it flopped, and an engineer working at the label or in the studio found this track and was like, well, this is a great song. Yeah. Why don't I play around with it? And then it was a huge hit. So I think that's really interesting. And also over the last couple of years, I became obsessed a few years ago with Harry Nilsson. And
I love Harry.
And I read his biography. Harry. And so all his early work is the horn arrangements are by this guy, George Tipton, who just did incredible things and really kind of formed his early sound. And so I was, you know, not that I
listened to the
comparing
point.
Myself to Harry Nilsson or George Tipton, but
right.
I really enjoyed that. And so I wanted to introduce something of, you know, some more unusual instrumentation than just folk guitar.
Did you listen to his album, The Point, which is his concept
album? Oh, yeah, the
album.
Film. Yeah, absolutely.
It was a film. Yeah. It was called The Point. And me and my arrow was on that.
That's
and, he was great.
Clever wordplay.
He was the first artist signed to Apple, apparently.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
That's right.
Oh, interesting man. He was a good friend of the Beatles, and he just went and hung out in London, met them, and they said, and apparently, famously, John Lennon on his first tour, who's your favorite singer in the rock world? And he said, Harry Nilsson. And nobody knew who he was,
and
really.
And then they said, who's your favorite band?
Yeah.
And Paul said, Harry Nilsson.
Harry Nilsson.
Yeah.
Because they were really promoting him, right?
Right.
But he's a really cool writer. Anyway, we digress.
So where can our listeners find out some more about you, Eric? And
at the Opera House this Friday. Come to the show. Tickets are available on my website, G3NEric, with a C, generic.com. You can find me there. The links to everything is there. It's, you know, I'm on Twitter and SoundCloud and Instagram. But go to generic.com. You can find it all there.
Perfect.
Or, the Facebook page. There's a Facebook event for this show. Lots of great bands
coming. And when your album's released, it'll be on all the platforms,
it'll
like
be
iTunes,
on
et cetera.
All the platforms,
iTunes,
every
Spotify.
Platform. The iTunes, Spotify. I'll probably do maybe a little exclusive on the website first. There's some people who contributed to the crowdfund campaign who will get an early thing.
Yep.
But I will bump. You got your T-shirt now?
I got my T-shirt, so wait for the CD.
It fits. That's great.
It fits. It's a great T-shirt, actually.
Yeah, and so...
it is just a generic T-shirt.
I'll do a little... CD release party, and then I am planning a tour. We'll see how the rest of it goes, but the plan is to make it out west and maybe north, and then kind of work my way home playing gigs.
Perfect.
And, do
There's
the directions home,
home
tour.
Again.
Coming home. Right on. Bruce, do you have a final word?
We have a quote tonight. Vanessa was very kind to give me the Songwriter's Journal, which is a book you can get here in town. For a songwriter, you don't really go to songwriting schools. You learn by listening to tunes, and you try to understand them and take them apart and see what they're made of and wonder if you can make one too. Tom Waits.
That was before Song Talk Radio.
Good old Tom.
Okay, I think that's about all the time we have. So thank you very much, Eric Sorensen, for being on the show.
Thank you, Neil, and Bruce, and Dave, and Vanessa.
Yeah, thanks. Great stuff. So this has been Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, and Dave filling in for Phil, filling. Okay. Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email, feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site, songtalk.ca. Subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes, and don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on our resources page. If you're in the Toronto area, join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup, Sunday, March 26th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transat Club. It's perfectly free to come by. I'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM for over 3 years of access to their station. Thanks to Dave for sitting in for Phil. Thanks to Vanessa for handling our social media channels. Mm. And thanks to me for doing the magic on the mixing board.
Thanks, Neil.
Running double duty tonight. And of course, thank you to our home listeners. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Bruce at
Bruce Harrett.
You can follow Dave
at Dave Afonik.
You can follow Eric
at Generic.
And that's G3 and Eric, right?
That's correct.
And you can follow Vanessa.
Sunny underscore Vanessa.
And you can follow myself, Neil, at neilmodi_.com. Be sure to stop by our informative and entertaining website, songtalk.ca. Browse past shows. Find out how you can be a guest on the show. That's all for tonight. Have a good night and keep on writing.
Night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Good night.